What is going on, guys? As always, welcome to Creeps in the Crypt.
We're back on our regular scheduled programming, so are we, like, on our regular
schedule? We're back on our bullshit.
We're back on it. With even more bullshit. As always, I'm Eric, and I'm joined by...
Christian.
And Sam.
So, a little bit of news. Little bit of shit going on.
There's things on the creep board.
Yeah, there's some creep keeping I have to do. Instagram has apparently told us to go fuck ourselves.
Mm. Oh, yeah, those dirty bastards.
Apparently, it's okay to post silhouette nipples on Instagram, but the second I post anything about a serial killer...
That's the only thing you're seeing on Instagram? Because I've definitely seen way more than that.
I've seen silhouette vaginas, too. It's like just meat curtains just hanging. But...
What side of Instagram are you guys on?
People paying for ads for this dumb shit. It's sponsored content. But I want to fucking post a picture of Richard Ramirez when he's a child or Carl Panzeram.
Nothing and it's even like that scandalous. It's just
like literally, it's they got us for inciting violence.
It's on both. It's on
Facebook. I fucking hate that whatever reality we have warped into. Because of CERN, I want out of it. Put me back in the Shazam timeline, goddammit.
It's definitely on
Shazam.
It's definitely on Facebook, too, because we tried...
Or Kazam. It's the Kazam timeline with Sinbad. Put me back in that shit.
I thought he was Shazam.
That's Shaq. Kazam was... I might be wrong. I don't fucking know. Either way, I don't want this. I don't want this anymore. Social media can eat a fat dick.
This is not on your 2023 bingo card.
Basically what pisses me off about this whole situation is that we put out semi-educational content and we're getting fucking railroaded because of some algorithm bullshit where it's attacking us because of hashtags we're using. And I mean, I knew for a while, I had a suspicion we were shadow banned.
We are shadow banned.
But, well, not anymore. I mean, we're just straight out fucking gated content at this point. They flat out told us. I posted their post to us, or their, you know, notification to us about it on our Instagram. Mm-hmm. But only our followers are going to see that. So, guys, that leads me to the next point. Please follow the Instagram. If you listen to the show, please follow us on Instagram. That is the only way you will see our content. And to our followers on Instagram, please share our content with your friends. Get the word out there because we're going to need a grassroots movement to make this work. Clearly, you know, the $500 I've spent marketing the show over the last 2 years... not done shit. So, not gotten me any presence with Instagram at all.
Are we asking our followers to storm the hill?
Yeah, storm the hill for us. Get the word out there. If we see a post on our Instagram page, share it on your story. Tell people to go follow Creeps in the Crypt. Send text messages to people. Tag people in Facebook post on us. Post our show link. However you listen to our show, post it on your Facebook wall. Post it on your Instagram. Do whatever you got to do. Get the word out there because that's what's going to help us out. Clearly, trying to use the algorithm to spread the word about the show isn't working. So, we appreciate you. We appreciate you, creeps, for all you do for us. And we really need you to come through on this one. That being said... if you like the show, to any new listeners, please leave us a review. Reviews really help us out, and downloads really help us out. Give us some downloads. But let's get on to the reason you guys are here. Enough about what's going on with us. We're here for Summer of Slaughter, guys.
It's been great.
And
I mean, it's only just started, but it's been great.
It's just started. I mean, we had to double up episodes for 1 week, but that's okay. Shit happens. Scheduling issues, people get sick, things happen.
I don't think anybody wanted to hear Sam just frogging
No one wanted to hear.
Froggy from the Little Rascals?
Yes.
No one wanted to hear what I sounded like. Like, at all.
When you were texting us in the group chat and just explaining, you're like, guys, like, my voice is gone. It is absolutely gone.
She sounded like Terry from those anti-smoking commercials that were out in the early 2010s.
Not Terry.
Stop it!
With the thing on the...
Yeah.
No. No.
She's got the little microphone for a tracheotomy.
That's what happens.
Talk through a hole in her throat.
Oh, my God. She would have had to hold up, like, place cards of what she was about to say and have one of us read it for her at one point.
Poor Terry. R.I.P. She passed away.
What? She really did? Yeah.
That's
from what?
What do you mean from what?
From smoking a pack in a half a day.
Wait, how is she still smoking? She had a tracheotomy.
I think she quit smoking by that point, but the damage was done.
From what?
I thought you were gonna say like she got hit by like a drunk driver that was driving like a truck full of cigarettes.
That would just be ironic.
Like an ABC truck that had like all the cigarettes.
That would be a little ironic, wouldn't it?
It would be very ironic. Where is the marble truck? Is that what she?
Salem's.
Oh no, where are the Virginia Slim trucks drivers?
That's
at?
Probably what it was. She's got to smoke them through her trach.
Ew! That's could you imagine?
I don't want to.
I bet people do that though.
Oh, I bet they do too.
Yeah, I mean,
do
if
they
you're,
do the smoke rings
you're smoking
because
two
it's already,
packs
like,
of Pall Malls a day. Yeah, if you're smoking two packs of Pall Malls a day, you're not gonna stop. It's just like, well, I've got a hole in my throat. Like this truck's just got to keep on going.
Do they just like blow like Cherokee style like smoke rings for party tricks?
Oh Jesus.
Christ almighty. Anyway, let's get back into Summer of Slaughter and not
reverse smoking.
Smoking
There's
shit.
A whole demographic that doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure they do because I looked on Spotify, like what our listener base looks like. It's mostly people in their 30s to 50s. We are not getting any like young listeners on this
show.
No
Gen Zers?
No, we have like 1%.
That's okay.
They're not here for our boomer humor.
Our boomer? Did you just call
we
me
We are
a
not boomers.
Did you just call me a
We might boomer? Not be, but our humor is.
It's the trauma.
I won't accept it.
It's the trauma. It's all the trauma that we've gone through over
That's
the years.
That's cap. Just going to go ahead and say that.
Well, we weren't born with an iPad in our hands and we'll never be able to relate.
You're a part of the ops.
But summertime, guys.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. She's inundated because of our child. She's down with the lingo. I don't know how to do this.
I'll translate it for you
yes,
later.
Yes, please do. Summertime, a lot of people go to what, guys?
The beach.
You're on the right track, but
the
no.
Asylums.
Shut the fuck up.
Hotels.
Yes. Yes, you dumb broad. Hotels.
That's like an insane asylum. You get fuzzy socks at those.
I mean, actually, the hotel that we're going to be discussing in length today is kind of like an insane asylum. It'll make you go insane.
So he calls me a dumb broad, and I'm not much far off from what we were talking about. I get a check mark.
Well, you weren't trying to actually like correlate that with the episode.
How do you know that?
I do know that. I live with you. I have entered you before. I know these things.
I would like to exit.
Sometimes me too.
Get the fuck out.
It's like an insane asylum in there.
For
this window unlocked, I would like to leave.
Sam, you have at least another hour and a half of recording to do.
Not just a recording of this.
Yeah. So we are continuing on with H.H. Holmes today. So Sam, without further ado, let's continue the story of H.H. Holmes.
So we last left off H.H. Holmes, the ever masterful and charismatic con artist. He had swindled money from his drugstore employers, the Holtons, right? I keep wanting to call them the Hortons. It's the Holtons.
The Hortons here to who?
Yes.
They hear Holmes.
The Holtons here at Holmes. Say Horton. That's a terrifying take on a children's story.
Anyway,
Dr. Seuss is rolling in his grave right now.
Look at all my grease shoots.
It is like
from the Bumble Sluts.
Oh my god. I feel like that is a one. Isn't it? There's like the star bellies and they jump down the chutes and then they get changed into different
to
ones.
To a pit of lime?
Yes. I know. Don't ever let us write children's books.
I would never. Actually, you know what? Maybe.
No, I'm good.
That would be cute.
I know my audience, and that isn't it.
So, H.H. Holmes had purchased the empty lot in the Inglewood area of Chicago, right across from Holton's. And he built a labyrinth-like structure with shops on the first floor and small apartments above, and then he built the third floor. Throughout the building's construction, H.H. Holmes apparently switched builders and architects so frequently so that no one involved would be able to realize the gruesome end goal of all the odd parts.
What's fascinating about this is Holmes actually drew the whole architectural side of this thing out himself, and it would just basically have architects check bits and pieces of it. So he would like have one architect, you know, double check his work and then fire the guy and then take another part of his concept to a different architect and just rotate these guys in and out, just like he did the workers.
Mm-hmm.
He would have one construction, like one guy work on a hallway and then 2 weeks later tell him his work is shit, and then that would be grounds for him not to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this time and time again, and there was always people willing to work because people were moving to these metro areas to find work.
Yeah, he did it with about 500 workers.
Yeah. Which allowed him, because he was the only one that could see the end goal in mind.
Right.
And there was people that questioned him throughout this that will talk about later on.
All I'm going to say is, thank God he didn't have a severance pay.
Right.
Well, I mean, these guys are contractors.
Mm.
So he's contracting to do the work. He's like, the work's not up to my standard. Get the fuck out.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and then he would just be like, I'm not paying you.
Yeah, I don't have to pay you shit. Like, and these guys would bring their materials to the job, and then he wouldn't pay them because he's like, the shit's fucked up. I'm going to have to fix this.
The castle features, so we're going to talk about the murder castle in itself.
Because I feel like that needs to be discussed.
It does. It is so intricate and well thought out.
There was a purpose for every
fucking thing. Here's my literally everything. Thing. Novice here. Does this place even still exist?
No.
No.
Oh.
And we'll get into that in episode 3.
They didn't turn it into like a McDonald's playpen?
No, it wasn't a Twisted Sister playpen.
Worse.
They turned into a Dollar Tree.
Worse.
A Dollar General.
Even worse. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. A fucking United States post office.
They turned it into a post office?
Yeah, it's
there's a plaque on a tree.
So it causes misery in another way.
Yeah, still is...
Still just, an insane asylum.
Yeah, it's still just causing pain and suffering to this day.
Just in a different way?
Just in a totally different way.
It's a little poetic, honestly.
It is really poetic, actually. That's so funny.
So the castle featured soundproof rooms, secret passages, and a disorienting maze of hallways and staircases. The rooms were also allegedly outfitted with trapdoors over chutes that dropped Holmes's unsuspecting victims into the building's basement. H.H. Holmes was very good at figuring out different ways to suffocate people.
That was his favorite.
Yeah.
That was kind of his bread and butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
He loved...
He just liked asphyxiation in general, which we'll get into that in a little bit.
We'll discuss that in a little bit. There's going to be a lot of asphyxiation and cum in this episode.
Get out.
I mean, don't, you know, yuck is yum, you know, the guy likes what he likes.
He installed a soundproof, airtight vault lined with steel with a gas flame, which he stated was there for a, quote, a source of light. But if you blew on any of the air pipes that were connected to the vault, you would put out the flame, and anyone who was in the vault would quickly suffocate.
What's fascinating about the vault, though, is when he had it installed, he got it on, like, a payment plan type of thing. And the company that installed it, or sold it to him, came to repossess it because he hadn't paid him.
And be like, you can find it. If you can find it, you can have it.
No, I mean, he fucking had the thing. It was cemented into the building itself. And he's like, if you can come and get the vault, but if you damage a single fucking piece of my building, I'm going to sue the shit out of you. So the company that sold it to him was like, well, it's really not worth it because we're going to have to destroy the wall to get the damn vault out. So it costs us more in legal fees than it would to get the damn vault back. So they just kind of said, fuck it.
That's so wild. This whole story, I'm just like...
He is the antithesis of a con man. Mm-hmm. He's a flim-flam man. Always working an angle. Always doing something. It just happens to be at this point in time in his life. It's Mortar.
So there was also a gas pipe system with valves in H.H. Holmes's bedroom that allowed him to pick and choose when he would let gas flow into his unsuspecting guest's bedroom and slowly and silently kill them.
This sounds like the worst episode of Jeopardy I've ever heard of in my life.
Well, he had secret windows in the rooms, mm-hmm. too, where he could watch them suffocate. I'm getting there. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're getting too excited over there.
I am. I have a murder boner right now.
Oh, my God. Can you, like, cap it or something? Put a little hat on it.
I'll handle it later.
Is it a bowler hat?
No.
It's got a mustache.
There was a completely sealed off room in the middle of the second floor among the many trapdoors and chutes. It was disguised as kind of like an extra space in the back of a closet. Kind of like it was a little like little holes where... Behind like a
staircase?
No, like the little vent things, and there would be like instead of like an air shaft, it's like a room.
Yeah,
it's like a hidden room.
So like the air handlers in this room.
Oh, I got you.
But think of them like on the side of the wall.
Okay. Yeah. So, but the true quote entrance to this room was discovered by police when they tore one of the walls down. It was a trap door, like, in the corner of the ceiling that could only be accessed by climbing through a fake elevator chute that would only be opened from the outside. So, like, you couldn't climb up the wall and pull it open. It had to be accessed from the other side. And this would force whoever fell into the room to die a slow death by starvation alone in the dark.
Yeah, that's a brutal way to go, man.
Mm-mm. Yeah. That is a horrific way to go. Many of the secret rooms at the murder castle were lined with iron, and it was mainly used to soundproof the rooms, except for one of them. This room was not only lined with sheet iron, but it was also lined with asbestos. Like many of the torture rooms, the room also was equipped with gas pipes that
They're just going to catch mesothelioma?
Shut up.
If they were alive today, they would be making a phone call to get a...
To get compensation.
To get some compensation.
Anyway, the room was also equipped with gas pipes that were controlled from H.H. Holmes's bedroom. Authorities believe that this specific room was intended to be both fire and sound and escape proof.
Dude, this guy, he's really a visionary.
He's a mastermind.
He thought of every single fucking
thing he could think of. Like 25?
Something like that.
I think he's in his, like, right at 30 at this point.
That's,
yeah, I'd say that's, he's picking up steam.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, a berserker mode, like, the bloodlust mode that a lot of serial killers go on, he never really hits it. He's just kind of doing his thing.
He's steady rolling.
Well, remember, he's still working insurance scams this entire time.
Yeah, well, this is why he was killing people.
The whole concept of him committing these murders, which he'd find out later on that he enjoyed for sexual gratification, but it was to collect money to keep this fucking hotel afloat.
Yeah, because it wasn't really a hotel.
No, it was his play palace. Mm.
So, some of the scariest devices that were found in the basement of the murder castle were meant for getting rid of the bodies rather than torturing the living. There was a human-sized stove, and vats of acid, and like a kiln, and well, like
what's crazy is the crematory he had put in. He said it was for some new thing, new process he had come up with for glass blowing or some shit.
Yeah.
And the guy who was installing it basically was like, that's not big enough for doing any like glass molding. So, but he didn't think anything of it. It was literally a perfect size slot for a human being to go that would burn at like the same temperature as a retort for a cremation.
It's insane what this guy got away with.
And people just didn't think anything of it. Nobody put two and two together.
Literally no. There was no math being done here. Another device that was found in the basement, this one was intended for the living, and it was a stretching rack. H.H. Holmes called it the, quote, elasticity determinator.
Yeah, his whole thing was like trying to get people to grow.
Was he short?
He was like 5'9", 5'10", I think.
Okay, so like average.
But the whole thing was he's a doctor. So it's like, I'm doing experimentation to see if I can make people grow longer. But really, it's just a fucking medieval torture device called the rack.
Yeah.
Which we'll do an episode eventually on medieval torture devices.
I think that would be fun. I'm so down with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that would be a fun one.
So he performed these experiments that measured how far a person could be stretched. His victims were slowly stretched and bent until their bones broke, and they eventually died. He would then dissolve the bodies in acid or disintegrate them in his giant-ass kiln. And when he wasn't torturing his guests or getting rid of their bodies, he would send both the dead and the unconscious ones down a secret chute into the basement. And then he would put them on his operating table and conduct experiments on them. He would dissect and perform grisly medical procedures on them using a mix of different surgical instruments and poisons and whatnot. He would finish them off by removing their organs and cleaning the remaining flesh off of their bones, which...
Well, his favorite was chloroform.
Well, yeah.
And there was one that started with an L, but it's basically just morphine. He loved using those two.
I don't remember what the other one's called.
I can't remember what it's called.
Lithium? Lithamine?
It might be.
Lithium?
No, like, I can't remember. We'll have to look it up eventually.
So once he finished cleaning the remaining of flesh off of the bones, he would then sell them to doctors and medical departments as anatomical models.
Sometimes he wouldn't even do it himself. He would outsource it.
Ew. The murder castle was equipped with a complex system. This is like my favorite part.
Okay.
So, morbidly, of course. Anyway, So the murder castle was equipped with a complex system of alarms that sounded like buzzers in H.H. Holmes's bedroom. He used this system to monitor the guests' movements throughout the hotel. The buzzer would sound whenever someone would open a door. So if someone left their room, it would ring or buzz or whatever in H.H. Holmes's bedroom, signaling him that, like, someone's up. And whatever it was, okay, so it was also useful in the fact that if someone managed to escape one of the torture rooms, he would be able to leap into action. And I just find it cool. He essentially invented the alarm system.
It's basically like a Ring camera before a Ring camera was a thing.
Yeah, but in like a weird opposite way.
He loved gadgets and shit. Like, he was a tinker.
Gadgets and gizmos aplenty.
I don't think he's part of Ariel's world.
No. No. He had his own little world, though.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I want to go where the people are.
He does want to be where the people are. So, he used this alarm system kind of in a reverse, in a way, I guess. Because he used it to kill them more efficiently, essentially.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can literally track the movements within the building.
Yeah. But it's just cool because it would just like, bzz, whenever any door was open. I see his little like spidey senses tingling. Like,
wild.
Door open. I don't know. It was just cool. I love that part.
And it would also tell him if he had deployed a torture tactic, if it worked or not. Like, say he was trying to fill a room with gas. Well, the person, like, goes to leave the room. But those doors also had locks, too.
I also
where he would lock people in.
I don't know if it, like, told him what door opened or if it's just a door open.
I would say there was probably a ringer connected to each fucking door.
That's a lot of wiring.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Sam on that. Maybe he just knew.
Well, think of it this way. There's probably it might not have been that much wiring. It could have been a rope pulley system type of thing. I mean, for fuck's sake, he had secret rooms and shit. You don't think this guy, like, foresaw how to do something like that?
He's the original Jigsaw.
He is the original.
In a way, yeah. He's thought out every fucking circumstance he could think
mm-hmm.
of.
So the second floor of the castle was the perfect stalking ground for H.H. Holmes, thanks to a network of secret entrances and peepholes. Some of the rooms had fake walls that hinged open. Others had hidden doors that led to secret chambers that only he knew how to navigate. These doors were either disguised as regular doors or so immaculately hidden that no one had any reason to believe anything was amiss. The hallways and the doors were also designed to disorient his victims and lead them to their deaths. Some of the rooms had multiple doors, while others had none at all, like the one we talked about with the trap door. It was like
the Winchester House.
Literally.
It was... like, if you've ever seen the Winchester House, it's literally like that. There's just doors that open up to brick walls. There's windows that don't do anything.
There's doors that open with nothing at them, just outside.
Yeah.
Only someone with the knowledge of the building would truly know the best and quickest way to get around. Most of the castle was designed to kill his victims remotely. But H.H. Holmes really enjoyed strangling people, so much so that he had a whole room dedicated to it. It was named the Secret Hanging Chamber by investigators. H.H. Holmes would stalk and isolate his victims and knock them out with chloroform, and then he would drag them into the hanging room. The other end of the hotel's second floor was a mess of narrow, doorless hallways that were set at weird angles. Guests never stood a chance at finding the right way out.
Well, back onto the strangulation thing with him, I'll just go ahead and get into it now. what he came to find out was he really liked that the feeling he got made his pants a little tighter when he would overdose somebody on chloroform and then their body would start fucking convulsing. And that made him hard. So that
I'm just ignoring you on this one. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, that's what would happen. He would just start, you know, polishing the one-eyed wonder weasel, you know? The looks I'm getting right now, guys. Oh, if we only had video.
I'm still stuck on the Sam and you talking about the, I want to be where the people are. I want to see them gasping.
Get the fuck out.
H.H. Holmes placed newspaper ads offering jobs for young women and advertised the castle as a place of lodging. He also placed ads stating he was a wealthy man looking for a wife.
Because, once again, he's always looking for a scam. He was trying to find wealthy suitors and women that were coming to town for promises of careers and whatnot. And that's what he preyed upon. That was kind of his MO.
Yeah. So H.H. Holmes recruited three people to help him with his work, we'll call it. They were Charles Chappell, Patrick Quinlan, and Benjamin Peitzel.
Who will be important later on.
Yes.
Now, how he got these guys was, remember, the bottom floor of the hotel was all shops and retail. So Charles Chappell was in charge of the pharmacy type shit, if I recall correctly. And he was also a doctor and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin answered Holmes' ad, one of his ads for fucking work. Basically, like carpentry work. So, as any good supervillain has, he's got henchmen. These dudes are the henchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holmes is a fucking supervillain. Like, 100%.
He's like Megamind.
I don't know who that is. I was thinking.
You don't know who Megamind is?
No.
He's got a big head.
Okay. And I mean, I would assume so, given the name Megamind.
Grilled you?
Well, I mean, I was thinking more like a Dr. Evil.
Yeah. Well.
Who does number two work for?
Anyway, one of H.H. Holmes's early victims was his mistress, Julia Smythe. Phonetically, that's what that should say.
Let's go with it.
I would go with it.
Anyway, she was the wife of a man named Ned Connor, who had moved into H.H. Holmes's building and began working at his pharmacy's jewelry counter. After Ned found out about Julia's affair with H.H. Holmes, he quit his job and moved away, leaving Julia and their daughter Pearl behind.
This is really fucking sad because supposedly this is one of Holmes's first true victims. There's some questionable ones, and that's why we left them out, because supposedly they were found. They weren't true victims. They were part of the insurance scams.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, we're going to fake your death, yada, yada, yada. We're both going to get paid.
So Julia gained custody of Pearl and remained at the hotel, continuing her relationship with H.H. Holmes. Julia and Pearl ended up disappearing on Christmas Eve of 1891, and H.H. Holmes later claimed that she had died during an abortion.
Yeah, because basically her husband, like, dipped.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm not dealing with this shit, and just left.
Honestly.
Don't blame him.
No.
But
he didn't have to leave their daughter behind.
Look, man, H.H. Holmes was good on the bush, man. He was a lady killer.
And
literally. Literally and figuratively. So she gets knocked up and that he's like, nah, I already got some kids back somewhere else that I'm trying to avoid. I'm not doing this anymore. So tells her she has to get an abortion. And
wasn't he performing botched abortions for a while?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So despite his medical background, H.H. Holmes was unlikely to be experienced in carrying out abortions, and mortality from such a procedure was high at that time. H.H. Holmes claimed to have poisoned Pearl, likely to hide the circumstances of her mother's death.
Yeah, they didn't have shop vacs at that time, so they're not shop vacing that thing out.
That's not a real thing.
I know, I was making a joke. Mm. Realistically, you probably used like an ice pick. I mean, lobotomies were a thing back then, so. That's so bad.
Ew.
Ice pick lobotomies, you know?
I know.
Realistically, he probably just fucking killed her.
Somehow that's better.
But it makes for a great story to be like, to, you know, explain that death away.
A partial skeleton, possibly of a child around Pearl's age, was found when excavating H.H. Holmes' cellar. Pearl's father, Ned, was a key witness at H.H. Holmes' trial in Chicago. H.H. Holmes paid a man to remove the skin from the corpse of an unusually tall woman.
So that was actually Charles Chapel that did that for him.
Okay.
So he helped Holmes, because Holmes, he was a busy man.
Yeah.
He was outsourcing the work. So basically, he paid Charles, I want to say the figure was like $50, which is probably a couple hundred in 1890s time. But he sold it to, well, go on. He sells the skeleton for like the equivalent of $5,000 or $6,000.
Well, it was an unusually tall female, and Julia stood nearly 6 feet tall,
which at that time was very tall.
It still is tall for a woman. I'm 5'3".
She's 5'8".
Yeah, I'm not 6 foot though.
No, I mean I don't consider that nearly 6 foot. I'm thinking like 5'10".
But people back then were shorter.
Maybe I have a long back then.
Well, you know, time travel.
Well below average for a female. No visible clues to the skeleton that he had sold of the unusually tall woman. No visible markings or anything were on it, so it can't be proven that it was or wasn't Julia. Benjamin Peitzel answered one of H.H. Holmes's ads in the fall of 1889, and he later met a woman named Emmeline Sigrand? I don't know.
Sounds good.
A beautiful young woman who worked as a stenographer in the Dwight, Illinois office of Dr. Keeley, of the famous Keeley Cure for Alcoholism.
So, Keeley is another one of these flimflam men. Basically, his whole thing, snake oil salesman.
What the hell is that?
So, all right. So, back during this time, there was these dudes that would go from town to town and try to sell these, like, cure-alls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you buy this, it'll cure cancer. Type of thing.
Got it.
So these guys would travel from town to town, and this dude had this supposed like 100% cure rate for alcoholism, which Peitzel was a hardcore alcoholic. So basically, Holmes sent Peitzel there to try to steal this cure so he could sell it.
Right.
And profit off of it, because always the ever-cunning con man, that was the angle Holmes went with.
So while Benjamin was away for this gold cure.
Do you want to know what the gold cure was? So
I don't know.
Gold cure, this asshole would inject liquid gold like basically a bunch of gold flake in saline solution, pretty much, right into the person's bloodstream, and that was supposed to cure their alcoholism. Yeah.
I liked it better when there were ghosts in your blood and you should do cocaine about it.
I mean, this is that same exact time. Cocaine is legal at this time.
I mean, I don't like cocaine, but...
I mean...
I like that.
If you're in 1890, do some cocaine about it.
Literally. Or inject gold into your bloodstream. That's so dumb.
Dude, people were very dumb back then. Back very then? Stupid.
Back then?
I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah. People are still dumb today.
They get a little bit more credit today than back then. You know, the internet. Well,
there's just no reason to be dumb these days.
The internet.
The internet. It's the best and worst thing we've ever invented is humanity.
So, Benjamin writes H.H. Holmes telling him of this beautiful secretary. And then H.H. Holmes writes Emmeline after learning about her and offered her double her salary to come work for him as his personal secretary. Mm. So she leaves Keeley's office and heads to Chicago. Upon arrival, Holmes immediately deployed his tools of seduction.
Which he was a master of. He basically would love bomb these girls.
Oh, and, poor babies.
And then when the minute he got tired of them.
And that's his MO.
Yeah, I mean, he is a textbook psychopath that looks at people as objects. And when he's tired of his new plaything, he gets rid of them.
Literally. So it's unclear as to when exactly their relationship turned intimate. And it was also supposed to be a secret because... She's his secretary. But several residents of the castle had their suspicions. H.H. Holmes convinces Emmeline that he's the son of an English lord and promises to take her to his father's estate once they honeymoon.
Dude, this is like, he's running the Nigerian email scam.
He really is.
100 years before the Nigerian email scam happened.
Literally.
This dude is like, he's a trailblazer, a visionary, a total piece of shit.
He invented security systems and the Nigerian prince scam.
He's running insurance scams where he's digging up cadavers and then saying, hey, this is my buddy Bill. I'm going to put an insurance policy on this guy.
And then
Bill's
oh no,
blown up in a fucking accident.
Conveniently.
It's not conveniently. It was a tragedy.
That too.
Oh, God, it's so tragic. Where's my $10,000? Right. Money me now.
So, obviously, H.H. Holmes is an English royalty, so this is not going to happen.
I love how he's trying to do this scam with no English accent.
Right? Like, did you like, just
what
like...
What a fucking turd. He's like, oh, she's a dumb broad. Like, she'll believe it.
Women are stupid. Unfortunately, Emmeline won't make it out of his castle because he seals her in the airtight vault shortly before Christmas of 1892.
This is the saddest shit.
I know.
They were supposedly getting ready to go on their honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were getting ready to get wed.
Yep, they're going to get married.
And he's like, hey, honey, go in there and fetch something for me. This is one of his, like, iconic Bugs Bunny versus Daffy Duck, Roadrunner versus Wile E. Coyote plots. He's like, I left some papers in the vault. Why don't you go get those for me? Sam, what happens next?
Well, he locks her in the vault.
Well, the way he does it, though, is super fucked up because he basically sneaks around the side and then just pushes the door from the side. And she's like, what the fuck? Help me out. Get me out. and he's like, opens the sliding peephole thing, and then just watches her suffocate. But the whole vault is lined with caustic acid.
So, what is that?
So basically, like, think like sulfuric acid.
Okay.
So this is like acid that's going to start eating away at the skin type shit, just to kind of speed things up a little bit. Meanwhile, he is furiously masturbating at the sight of her, like, in a sheer state of panic, because all of a sudden she's realized, oh, fuck,
I'm going
to die.
Yeah, he's going to let me die.
That's what this is about. It's about extending that hope out. Like, oh, this person loves me. And then all of a sudden the realization hits that, oh, God, I'm in a fucking tiger's den. That's the payoff for H.H. Holmes.
She's like a little rabbit in a lion's den.
That's exactly what this is.
A gazelle.
Well, I would say the rabbit's probably more accurate.
I just wandered into the lions.
Oh, they'll eat a rabbit. I know my kitty cats love to chase.
I love those little. Speaking side note, those little assholes haven't been up here one time. They're like we're not.
Lucy's here.
Oh, she. Salem's
she's asleep.
Salem's not interested in H.H.
She's a baby.
No, he's executive produced it.
He sent his detail up here.
Yeah.
She's asleep on the job.
Yep.
Oh, you get a pass, little girl. We love you.
We know who Christian's favorite is.
What? I don't pick favorites.
So, Emmeline, before she disappears, she'd offered one of her neighbors, Mrs. Lawrence, an early Christmas gift and spoke in vague terms about her future, which prompted Miss Lawrence to ask Emmeline if she was leaving Chicago. And Emmeline said, maybe. And then she was never heard from again.
Suspicious.
Right.
So what's crazy about this is when the cops went to investigate Emmeline's death, like, basically when Holmes is arrested later on, that we'll get to next episode, they were, you know, inspecting all the stuff in the hotel, and they saw a human footprint etched into the vault that she was used, and Holmes used to kill a lot of women. But they suspect that it's Emmeline's foot that left that mark. It's an indention, a foot-shaped indention. They think it's because of the acid that was used that it helped burn a hole in the... some type of indention into the door of the vault.
I don't like that.
That she was pressing with that much force to try to open that motherfucker. It's tragic that this person was able to, like, lure all these women into this situation.
A ton.
Like, Holmes only confessed to, what, 27 murders? They suspect he...
Yeah, officially.
Yeah, they suspect he killed upwards of 200.
That's awful. Mrs. Lawrence asks H.H. Holmes about where Emmeline went, and he responded that she'd gotten married to her fiancé, Robert Phelps, a man which no one had ever heard of, and they'd left the city on their honeymoon, and he wasn't sure if they were ever going to return to the city. He showed a wedding card that was typewritten instead of the more traditional, like, wedding invitation-y.
Handwritten type. Calligraphy.
Yeah, that. And that did not satiate Mrs. Lawrence. It gave her a really uneasy feeling. And she told H.H. Holmes that, you know, like, no, I would have known. Like, I feel like she would have told me about Robert, or at least told me goodbye. Well, H.H. Holmes did not like that Mrs. Lawrence was growing suspicious. So a few days later, he knocks on her door and shows her a newspaper clipping that said, that announced Emmeline's marriage to Robert. And part of it, it's at the beginning, it says, the bride, after completing her education, because she was a stenographer, was employed as a stenographer in the county recorder's office. From there, she went to Dwight, and there from Chicago, where she met her fate.
Yeah, that'll do it. But what happens next is probably the cruelest shit Holmes, well, some of the cruelest shit Holmes ever did. Yeah. It shows the amount of forethought he fucking had.
Yeah. Holmes wrote a letter to her parents that she had met a man and was going to leave him for her. And the difference is that in responding to Peter Sigrand in a letter, H.H. Holmes argued that Emmeline had indeed married this unnamed man and had then moved away with him suddenly. In a second letter sent a few weeks later, H.H. Holmes claimed that the new Mrs. Phelps had been located and her unexplained absence satisfactorily clarified.
Yeah, because, you know, the family just took it as his word and like, well, I guess she's either happily married with this new guy or she's fucking dead. But yeah, that's going to cover us for this installment of H.H. Holmes. So when we pick up next week, we're going to cover the last bit of time in Chicago for him and what happens next. And it's pretty grim. But yeah, Christian, do your thing. Do that voodoo that you do.
Thank you guys so much for the love. And if you want to continue sharing us love, make sure you guys are hitting those socials. We appreciate it so, so much. It makes us happy to see those reviews. We get giddy inside. Warm and fuzzies. We love those. Make sure you guys are following us on Instagram, Facebook, the TikTok. Make sure you guys are commenting and reviewing the show. We love to hear your reviews, and we actually read them live on the show. So make sure you guys are leaving us a review. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So make sure you download the episode. And make sure your auto downloads are on. And we will see you next Friday. Stay creepy.
Stay spooky.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.